So first we're going to dedicate this class for the elevation of the soul of Sara Bat Salim Sagir, or Sagir, maybe I'm just reading it wrong. And Bezat Hashem, her soul should have an elevation. Now, we're in Parashat Shmini. We had a little bit of a break with Pesach. But we're starting now to really learn all the practical laws, and starting from this parasha. I mean, in the previous books, we learned a lot of history, a lot of information, and things that happened in the past of our forefathers and so forth. But now we're really going to start learning in the next parashot practical laws, how we start applying the mitzvot, and it starts in this parasha. And in this parasha, we see for the first time all the rules about our kosher diet, and it's talking about what we're allowed to eat, what we're not allowed to eat, how is an animal kosher, which animals are kosher. And we find that there's so many details in regards to the rules of kosher, which comes to a big question. Does Hashem really care about all these little details? I mean, that how am I eating my food? What am I eating? All these little details about our food. And a lot of people say, what, Hashem really cares what I eat? Well, it's not a diet program. I mean, I can understand. Yes, the parasha is Parashat Shmini. And I mentioned that in this parasha, we learn a lot about the laws of kosher. And there are many big questions about that. But one of the questions is, what does it matter what I eat? I mean, tell me not to steal, I understand. Tell me not to kill, I understand. Tell me what to eat. I don't understand that. And a lot of people, they have this question. Well, why does Hashem care what I eat? And Yeah, but I'm not talking about the health reasons, because the kosher, this is another question that a lot of people ask, is why only Jews have to eat kosher? Why non-Jews are not okay? They can eat impure animals? I mean, what's the difference between me and a non-Jew? Why am I obligated in eating kosher and the non-Jew is not? There's no laws whatsoever for non-Jews about kosher. So we see that it has nothing to do with health, because if it had to do with health, then Hashem would say, okay, also non-Jews are not allowed to eat that because it's not healthy. For example, you will see non-Jews, they don't have any restrictions in kosher. So kosher has nothing to do with health. So before we start, I mean, we want to learn, especially in this type of class that we do, is we want to learn something practical, not necessarily the historical fact or something interesting. I want to take something practical from the class about the parasha, because the parasha comes to teach me something in order for me to apply it to my life. Usually this class is on Sunday, so we can take that learning and apply it for the rest of the week. Now, because of Pesach, then I didn't want to miss a week of having a not class of the parasha, so we're doing it on Thursday, so we only have 2 days to apply it. But the point I want to take from any type of class that I learned from the Torah is, how do I apply it to my life? If I learn Torah and I don't apply it to my life, I miss the point. So I want to know, and not only me, many people are asking, I can understand many things, but kosher, what does Hashem care what I eat? That's what He cares about, the little details, how I ate it, how I slaughtered the animal, what I mixed in it. Well, okay, tell me, you know, 2-3 rules and get it over with. Why does Hashem care about that? More than that, is we're going to go through it, is what are the signs about that makes the animal kosher? Now, is the animal kosher to start with and it just has signs that I can recognize it? Or is it actually the signs that making the animal kosher? So we'll go through that too. And of course, the question that I already mentioned is, how come only Jews are obligated in eating kosher and non-Jews are not obligated in eating kosher? I mean, I'm not allowed to steal, and also a non-Jew is not allowed to steal. I'm not allowed to kill or commit adultery. Same thing with a non-Jew. But we see many laws that non-Jews don't have to follow, and one of them, which is a great wonder, is why the kosher diet. And Baruch Hashem, we have many students that are not Jewish, and they always ask, should I keep kosher? So, and the answer, of course, is no. A non-Jew is not obligated in keeping kosher. I mean, it's recommended even for a non-Jew to eat kosher meat, because, and we're going to learn why in a second, and many other things, but a non-Jew is not obligated and can eat whatever they want. So we see from that already that it has nothing to do with health, it's rather more spiritual. But Bezalel Hashem will go through all these questions. But before, just to tell you a quick joke that will put things in the right perspective, is that there was once a Jew, and he was a businessman, and unfortunately one day business was not going that great, and he lost a very big business deal. And with this big business deal that he lost, he came into a lot of debt. And with that, started owing a lot of people money, and the situation became worse and worse and worse, and he found himself in a very bad place. So the rumor around the town reached to the priest of the town, who approached the Jew, and he told him, listen, I heard you're in a very big financial problem. Let me help you. So the Jew says, okay, how can you help me? So the priest told him, listen, I'm going to pay all your debts. You're going to be debt-free, but I have one condition. He's like, what's your condition? He's like, I want you to convert to Christianity. So the Jew says, okay, you know, I don't really care. I'm not really observant. I'm not really religious. As long as my debts are paid, fine. That's what you want me to do? Fine, I'll convert. Okay, he hands him over a very fat check. The Jew pays off all his debts. Then he comes and he tells him, okay, now you have to fulfill your promise. You have to convert. The priest takes a cup of water. He sprinkles on the Jew the water. And he tells him, now say three times after me, I am no longer a Jew. I am no longer a Jew. I am no longer a Jew. Sprinkles the water on him. And he tells him, okay, now you are Christian. So the Jew is about to walk, and the priest says, wait a minute, how am I going to know that you're really following my rules and you renounce your Judaism? So the Jew is like, I don't know, you came up with a deal, you tell me. So he says, you know what, from now and on, you are not allowed to eat any kosher animals anymore, and from today you can only eat horse meat. And when you go to the butcher of the city, you can only buy a meat that comes from a horse. And I'm going to ask the butcher if you buy kosher food from him. Okay, the Jew didn't really care. And went on with his life. After a couple of months, the priest wanted to see that the Jew is really following the deal. So he comes by surprise to his Shabbat, to his Friday night meal. And, oh my gosh, he sees their chicken and cow. And he says, wait a minute, you just broke our deal. I told you, you're only allowed to eat a meat that belongs to a horse. So the Jew told him, you know what I did? I took this meat that belongs to a cow, and I took a little bit of water, and I sprinkled on the meat, and I said, you are not a horse. You are not a horse. You are not a horse. So... So we find it very funny sometimes, this whole thing with the kosher. There are three types of mitzvot that we mentioned a couple times that the mitzvot are broken into three categories. One of them is called mishpatim. We learned that a few weeks ago in the parasha of mishpatim. And a mishpatim is the laws that are very simple to understand. Not to steal, not to kill. And these are called mishpatim, rules. Now there are a type of mitzvot that are called edut. Edut is a testimony. And this is a mitzvah that we do to testify for something that happened in the past. For example, lighting candles on Hanukkah, commemorating the miracle of Hanukkah, and even things like celebrating Shabbat, we're commemorating the creation of the world. The mitzvah of Pesach is a testimony that we left Egypt. So a lot of the mitzvot fall under the category of testimony, what's called edut. And then there's one type of mitzvah that is called chukim. Chukim is all the mitzvahs that don't make sense. And for example, a mikveh or a red heifer. And one of them is kosher. It's a mitzvah that doesn't really make much of a sense. And a lot of people have a lot of issues with the whole kosher diet. And they say, okay, I understand, tell me not to eat the meat and dairy. And they'll find the reason health-wise why not to eat it. Or they say, okay, I'm not going to eat a certain animal. Fine, I'm not going to eat pork and shrimps. But does it really matter how I slaughter the animal? Who cares? Does it really matter that my cup is this milchik and fleishik? Then you go fanatic with it. So there's a certain line where people say, this I will agree with, because it says in the Torah, don't eat this type of animal or don't mix meat and dairy. But don't go OCD and start telling me not to mix my spoons, because this is dairy and this is meat. And doesn't matter how I do the slaughtering. I just go to the store. Is that a cow's meat? Just give me the meat. I don't care how they slaughtered the animal. And I don't care what certification is on the meat. So a lot of people have a problem with the extent of how kosher you have to go. And even the people who do want to follow all the rules, many of the rules, there's a big question, like why does Hashem really care about these little details? When it says in the Torah, don't steal, it doesn't come with details. It says, don't steal. So I can understand from that I can't steal from you, and I can't steal from you, and I can't steal in the morning, and I can't steal at night, and I can't steal big things, and I can't steal small things. The Torah just tells me, just don't steal. Don't try to be sophisticated and try to find a loophole in the system what you're allowed to steal. Don't steal. End of story. So when the Torah wants to be very focused on something, it just tells you, just don't do it. Here it doesn't only tell me, don't eat a certain animal. It comes and gives me a whole list of requirements, what would make the animal kosher, how the animal will be slaughtered, how to eat it, when to eat it, so many real rules. So we want to learn why, and how is that to do with me? Because in many of our classes, we mention how the kosher diet is extremely important. And many times that we talked about a certain concept, I went back to the original and said, it's eat kosher. Make sure that your diet is very kosher. And a lot of people say, yeah, but I'm very kosher already. There must be something that you're missing. We spoke about it a couple of times about the Chalav Israel and Bishul Israel in all the classes that we do about the Birkot HaNe'anim. And I always emphasize all sorts of things that kosher is the foundation of our existence. Because exactly how they say in America, you are what you eat. And what I put into my body becomes part of me. And one of the first things that we learn on in the Torah, now in these parashot, after we got the Torah, after we learn about the sacrifices, then we start learning about practical things. And one of the first things is about kosher. So it's extremely important to know, what has it got to do with me? Because a lot of people, they think that their kitchen is kosher, or that they follow the kosher rules, but they're really not following the rules exactly how it should be. And not too long ago, there's a certain lady that she kashered her entire kitchen. And right before Pesach, I remembered to call her and tell her, listen, you're going to make sure that your kitchen is going to be really, really ready for Pesach. Because I know you're not so observant. It was for her a mountain to cross to make the kitchen kosher. And I knew she's not going to really observe the mitzvahs of Pesach the right way. I mean, she's not going to eat a roll, but she's definitely not going to be particular about the things in the kitchen. And I told her, you got to be very particular about what you do with the kitchen, because if you're not going to sell your chametz and you're not going to put things away and all these extra rules, after Pesach, you're not going to be able to eat in your kitchen. Your kitchen is going to go back to square one. It's going to be not kosher anymore. Because if you have chametz in your kitchen and you didn't sell it, you can't eat that chametz anymore. That's it. You have to throw it. You have to burn it. And if you didn't sell now all your plates and cups during Pesach, you're going to have a problem now with all the stuff that you kashered already. You're going to have a problem now because a Pesach went through it. Aval ze Pesach. and this was in your possession. That's going to have a problem now. So, and she was like, I open now another hole, a new world. What? Now I have to do this? Now I have to do that? Why are you telling me that? After months of convincing to kosher the kitchen, she couldn't understand why she has to sell her chametz. What, I can't use my plates? I can't use my pots? I have to buy new pots? So, the point is that kosher goes into such details, and it's so important that it's important for every person that is God-fearing to understand why and where it's coming from and why do I need to follow it. Because if the Torah would not be particular about it, it would just tell me, don't this eat this animal, don't do this, don't do that, and finish with it. Excuse me. One of the ways that we see that the Torah is serious about something is that when it repeats it. If you see that most of the commandments in the Torah says it once. It doesn't repeat it anymore. When you see the Torah repeating something over and over, it means that it's important. And one of the things that we see a repetition is in kosher. It's talking about three times about kosher in the Torah. And in most cases, it only talks once. Not to kill, not to steal, not to commit adultery, all these things. It says once, not yitzach, that's it. It says twice in the Torah not to kill, and that's it. Another time that it will repeat it over and over, then we see that the Torah means business. About Shabbat, it's mentioned many times about Shabbat. Amazingly, it's off the subject, but you see that it's mentioned 36 times in the Torah about how to treat the converts. That you have to treat them with respect, that you have to honor them, that you have to accept them, and so forth. 36 times. It's the only commandment in the Torah that is repeating it over and over and over. 36 times it's talking about treating how to treat the converts. That's how the Torah is so strong about it. So we see that kosher is pretty important. It repeats it three times. Three times we find in the Torah the commandments about kosher. So we want to know what's the secret behind kosher and how does it apply to me. Now, first of all, when now we're starting a lot of the commandments of doing, we see that the Torah starts with the commandments that are important, that everything has to do with our mouth. And our mouth is very, very powerful. We mentioned that many, many times, how powerful our mouth is. Bezrat Hashem, next class, we're going to learn about Sfirat HaOmer, and in Sfirat HaOmer, we're going to see how the counting of the days is that we count 49 days, because we take the seven Sfirot, and we times that seven times, and we're going to talk about it in the next class. But we see that the number seven constantly comes back in the Torah in many different ways. And one of the places where we find that the seven is a dominating number is that we have seven gates to our body. So we have two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, and one mouth. And Hashem knew exactly why to create only one mouth and not to create two mouths. I mean, we have two eyes and two ears. Technically, we should have had two mouths. But Hashem was very smart, and he was like, oy vay, oy, if I will create, give them two mouths. One is enough. So we see that the Torah starts with a lot of the commandments and everything that has to do with our mouth. Now, a lot of people are very particular with what goes into their mouth. They will go to the supermarket and they will observe and they will go with magnifying glasses to see all the supervisions, what stamp is on the food. What comes into the mouth, they care, but what goes out of the mouth, that's a whole different story. There's a story once that the Baal HaTanya, he went on a trip, and before they arrived into a certain city, his chassidim went into one of the houses. It was more like a big synagogue, and they said, listen, the Baal HaTanya is about to come and we want to eat here, but we want to make sure that everything is kosher. And the chassidim were asking, where did you get that flour from? Where did you get this from? What did you do over this? They were interrogating the woman in the kitchen. Where did she get everything? And she was like, wow, they're so very strict. And then when they sat to eat, they all started Lashon Hara. Did you hear what this guy said about that guy? Did you see this? Did you hear about that? And the Baal HaTanya said, you were so particular of what goes into your mouth, and you're not particular what goes out of your mouth. So our mouth is a very powerful channel where we take things in and we also take things out. So this is not a class, we're not going to talk about what comes out of our mouth. This is just a side note that as much as particular that we want to be in what's going on into our mouth, we have to be particular what's going out of our mouth in regards to lying and cheating and lashon hara and all the bad things that our mouth can produce. But what goes into our mouth is extremely important. And usually what will go into our mouth is food and not nothing else. And it says in the Gemara that the Kadosh Baruch Hu protects the mouth of the tzaddikim. And dafka their mouth, that there's a story in the Gemara about a certain Tana, his name is Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. He's the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's father-in-law. And there's many interesting stories about him, especially that he had a very special donkey. And if you remember, in one of the classes that we had in the course about the gates of reincarnation, one of the intros, I was telling stories about his donkey, who's a reincarnation. And this was a very, very holy donkey. And the story in the Talmud says that he once arrived in a certain town, and he went to eat, and everybody was like, wow, this great rabbi is coming in, and they wanted to honor the rabbi, so they also right away ran out, and they gave the donkey to eat. And the donkey didn't eat. They gave him probably some straw, or some type of food that they give the donkeys. And the donkey didn't eat. So they came to him, and they're like, what's wrong with your donkey? Why is your donkey not eating? So he says, listen, my donkey is a very holy donkey. This is a special neshama in that donkey. And if he's not eating, it means that it's not kosher. And they're like, donkey doesn't need to eat kosher. So he says, yeah, but this is a very special donkey. And he's not eating it because on the straw that you gave him, it was given from an area that they didn't give maaser from it. And therefore it made the straw not kosher, and even the donkey didn't eat it. So the Gemara is talking about how the Kadosh Baruch Hu, he protects the mouth of a tzaddik, that even he's not going to let his animal eat something that is not kosher. And there's a big contradiction about it in the Gemara, because it gives two examples how a very big tzaddik failed in a very big sin. And there's a very big sage, his name is Rabbi Ishmael, that he made a very big sin with a candle. One Friday night, he was reading out of the light of the candle, and he couldn't see something, so he tilted the candle by mistake to make some more light, and you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat, because when you tilt the candle and the wax falls off the candle, then the wick burns more, and you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat. And he failed by doing that. Of course, it was by mistake. Now, there's another story about, about another Tana, his name is Yehuda ben Tabai, that he, by mistake, killed a person that wasn't Chayav Mitah. He was a judge, and he made the wrong judgment, and the person was not obligated in mitah, and he put him to death. And these are two great sages that they made a very big sin. So the Gemara there contradicts and says, what, the Hashem doesn't always protect the tzaddikim. Sometimes we see tzaddikim that they also failed, and of course this is done by mistake, they didn't do it deliberately in these two examples. But the Gemara is talking about, no, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is protecting the mouth of a tzaddik. That a tzaddik is not going to eat anything that is not pure, that is not kosher. That's where the Gemara is talking about, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is very particular about what's going into our mouth. Now, the Torah is telling us which animals we're allowed to eat and which animals that we're not allowed to eat. Amazingly, if you look at the way it tells us, it doesn't tell us which animal we're not allowed to eat. It says, "V'zoya be'ama asher mutar." This is the animal that you are allowed to eat. Which here we have already a very big hint that originally we were vegetarians. And up until the flood, nobody ate meat. Adam HaRishon was a vegetarian. It says in the Torah, "Mikol ha'etz asher bagan mimeno tuchal." Eat only from the trees. So till Noach, they weren't allowed to eat meat. After the flood, Noach did the first sacrifices, and then they were allowed to eat meat. But we learn just from this pasuk in the Torah that originally we weren't allowed to eat meat. And now the Torah comes and says, yeah, you're right, you're not allowed to eat animals, but from these animals you're allowed to eat. This is the animals that you're mutar lechol. So just from that, we already learn that originally we weren't allowed to eat meat. And even in a later stage when Mashiach is going to come, we're also going to go back to that level. We're not going to eat meat anymore. We're going to go back to how it was originally was, and we're going to stop eating meat. Of course, that's going to become in a much later stage of the time of Mashiach, because in the beginning we're still going to have the sacrifices. But originally, we're not meat eaters. Therefore, just as a side note, as just for the health part of it, it's not good to eat too much meat. But here... Yes, the body went into a much lower level.
Like sometimes when you try to be vegetarian, you know, there's such a mixed feeling about it. Even Chinese medicine, they say certain that we can't be fully vegetarian because our body unless we get a lot of supplements to cope with it. Is it not worth it?
The thing is that if you're looking at the health part of it, you can get proteins from many other things. So I don't want to talk about the health part of it, but yeah, our bodies became much, much more lower level than when the time of Mashiach is going to come and our bodies will be refined. We're not going to need to eat the meat. I'm going to get to the end of the class why we're really eating meat. I don't want to ruin the surprise, but really we don't need the meat. As if you're looking at the biological part of our body, we don't need meat. If we're looking for the proteins, you can get much more proteins than many other things. Eat almonds. There's more proteins in almonds than in meat. So, I mean, and I'm not promoting vegetarian. I'm not a vegetarian. I also eat meat. But if you're looking at the health aspect of it, we don't really need the meat. One of the many reasons why we started eating meat is because our bodies went down in its level. But by the end of the class, we're going to kind of summarize why we do need to eat meat and what's the point of it, and that's why it has to be kosher. But really, before the flood, we didn't eat meat. We didn't need to consume the meat. So first of all, we see from this parasha that the Torah is already hinting that generally, we're not allowed to eat meat. Just the Torah comes, "Be'emah azot mutar." This is the animal that you're allowed to eat. So the Torah is coming and doing an exception and says 99% of the animals in the world you're not allowed to eat. We're only allowed to eat 10 animals. That's the whole thing. There are only 10 animals that are kosher. All the rest of the animals are not kosher. So originally we see from that we're not allowed to eat meat. Now the thing is that in the meat, in the actual meat, if it's kosher, it affects us. That's one of the many reasons why we follow the laws of the kosher diet. Because what's in our meat affects us a lot. And that's a very important thing to consider it. And that's one of the reasons why we follow that. Now, there's a story of a certain individual who lived in Russia about 200 years ago. He's known as Rabbi Akiva Iger. Who has a lot of commentary on the Oral Torah and a lot of commentary on Hasidut, a very special individual. And an amazing thing, totally off the subject, that a few weeks ago somebody donated a bunch of books and we were cleaning them. A lot of books were really, really destroyed. But we were working and cleaning them. And as we were cleaning them, they were there on the table. And we had a couple here that came to spend the Shabbat with us. And the man was interested looking at the books, and as we were cleaning, one of them was a whole set of commentaries by Rabbi Akiva Iger, and the lady looked at it and he's like, "Oh, I'm a descendant of this special rabbi," who was a very special individual. But anyways, totally off the subject, so just remember that. This special individual was a very holy person. And one time he went to a certain wedding and he found out that all the food in that wedding was not kosher. And he didn't understand. He wanted to find out. And he went to the mashgiach of that wedding and he told him, tell me, I've heard something, there's maybe an option that something was not kosher in the food here. And the mashgiach was like, don't even bring this whole thing up. This nightmare was already over. Please don't tell me this story again. And he's like, what's going on? He's like, listen, there was a certain man that he was married, but then the get that he gave was something was wrong with the get, and there was a whole problem in halacha here in regards to the get, and then he got married again. And when they went at the time to the posek of the generation, who was the Balatanya says, if you're going to get married again, because you're not particular with what I told you to do, then all the food in that wedding is going to be treif. And that's what happened. And he went and did the wedding. And the mashgiach at the time says, I didn't even know that the Rebbe of the generation then gave that psak din, and I gave everybody to eat from then. And there's a whole problem going on. And how did he find out? Because this Rabbi Akiva Iger came to a certain town and a mother approached to him as a rabbi and she told him, listen, my son, he doesn't like learning Torah. And when we take him to the cheder, he doesn't like to learn. And when we hire the best teachers and he doesn't get it. So he tells her, check his kosher diet. And she was like, what are you talking about? We're very religious, we're very strict. What do you mean check his kosher diet? And he tells her, if he can't absorb the Torah, if he can't learn the Torah, and he doesn't like it, means that something's wrong with his kosher diet. And she's like, what are you talking about? We're 100% strict. And then he was like, okay, go and dig into your mind. Maybe he went somewhere. Maybe he ate somewhere not kosher. And she was like, the only place that I can think of that he ate that is not at home is a few years ago, he went to so-and-so's wedding. And he's like, okay, that's where he got it. Because all the food in that wedding was treif, was not kosher. And that's where he got it. And that's why the Torah is not being absorbed in him. So a lot of people come and tell me, you know, I come to your classes and you put me to sleep after 3 minutes. And I have a very good talent on making people fall asleep. When you don't notice because you're looking to this direction, you only see me. When I look to this direction, I see the heads going down. And people tell me, you don't get insulted? People fall asleep in your lectures? So I'm like, no, I'm probably have a good talent in putting people to sleep. My wife always gives me the kids. She was like, you put them to sleep, they fall asleep on you. With me, they don't fall asleep. Sometimes when I go to certain lectures, then people really are a big amount of people in the crowd fall asleep. And a lot of people, they're like, listen, isn't it insulting you or hurting? I'm like, no, because first of all, if they fell asleep, the mystical part behind it is that if the vessel of the person is not able to sustain the words of the speaker, then the person will fall asleep because the kli, the vessel, is not able to hold the information. And it happens to me a lot when I come and tell when I share my near-death experience story. That's when I really put people to sleep because the message is too strong or too powerful and the vessel of the receiver cannot handle it and the person will fall asleep. But it happens a lot when the nefesh, when the soul of the person has a little bit of impurity on it, and then the nefesh cannot handle the Torah. And what the result will be the person will fall asleep. So, what we eat affects our nefesh.
Must be cured.
Of course, it can be cured when a person is more particular with their diet. So if you learn Torah, and you go to a class, and a lot of people tell me, I come to your class, as I'm listening to you, it all makes sense and it's all very exciting and inspiring. When I go out, 3 minutes later, I don't even remember what you talked about. And when I come home, my husband or my wife will tell me, what was the class about? I don't know. He talked about something. It was very, very interesting, but I don't remember one thing. So When I first learning Torah, I would be extremely excited and inspired by what the teacher has to say. And then I would walk out of the class and I was like, I don't remember one thing. Come Shabbat, I would want to give over some Torah and I was like, I don't remember one word. I don't even remember what was the topic. So some people remember just the jokes. So the point is that when something like this happens, it's only because the nefesh is not pure. Now, we mentioned in our Shaar HaGilgulim class that our neshama is built from five levels, which the highest of the levels is called Yechida, then Chaya. These two levels have nothing to do with us. And the lower levels of our soul, which is called neshama, ruach and nefesh, they're in our body. And the lowest part of the soul is called nefesh, and the nefesh, it dwells in the blood. And this is a very clear pasuk, a verse from the Torah, that it says, "K'hanefesh hu adam." So our nefesh is in our blood. That's why you see that any place in the body that you will poke with a needle, blood will come out. Even if it's not poking a vein. Take even a little toe and poke it, blood will come out. Why? Because the nefesh that enlivens the whole body is all over the body. And for example, the ruach is in our heart and the neshama is in the top part of the brain. Even though, yes, also the ruach and the neshama, they're in the entire body, but the main place of dwelling is for the neshama, is in the top part of the brain, the ruach is in the heart and the nefesh is in the blood. So everything that I eat gets digested and becomes my blood, which means that if I eat something that is impure, now my nefesh becomes impure. So if I eat something that is kosher, if my diet is extremely strict and kosher, then my nefesh is pure. Now, techa, we're going to learn what does it mean pure and impure, because a lot of people say, what, you're telling me that I'm impure? Then what's wrong with me? Because I ate something that is not kosher, then I'm tameh. Or tameh is impure. Now, happens to be, Ashgacha Pratit, in the next class that we're going to talk about the Omer, this is one of the topics we're going to talk about, what's pure and what's impure, what's tameh, what's tahor. But when I eat something that is not kosher, it makes my nefesh impure. So what would be the result? The result will be that my speech is impure, that my thoughts are impure, that my behavior is impure. Now impure means not perfect, not good, not the right way. So when I'm saying my talk, my speech will be impure, means that I'm going to curse a lot, and I'm going to lie, and I'm going to cheat. It doesn't mean that I'm a bad person, but I know a lot of good people that if something was going to fall on them, and they get a little bit of a hurt or something, a bad word will come out of their mouth. That usually starts with an S, or starts with an F, or all sorts of other words. Why you say that word? Somebody cuts you in the street, you throw a word out. Why? I mean, think where it's coming from. And I'm just giving one example out of many. What it means an impure talk. Now, I'm not talking about when your talk goes even beyond impure. And in some people, every word, second word that comes out of their mouth is a curse. And every word that comes out of their mouth is a lie or gossiping or slandering. This comes because my nefesh is impure, then what comes out of it will be impure. Same thing with my thoughts. My thoughts can be pure thoughts and my thoughts can be impure thoughts.
Except a teenager.
It's everybody. Even you can do that test even on kids. Kids, you would see right away the difference. Take a kid that their diet, their kosher diet is 100%. You see the kid is more refined. They don't curse a lot. They don't scream a lot. Their behavior is not so aggressive. I gave you already, I don't want to repeat it, one time we had when we moved to California with my son that he was given in the kindergarten milk that wasn't Chalav Israel, how his entire behavior became aggressive. So the food affects our nefesh because it goes directly to the nefesh. So what's going to be in the food, one of the main reasons why I do eat kosher, it's not the health part of it, it's not about being OCD, rather it's because it affects my nefesh. And once it affects my nefesh, nefesh is the lowest part of my neshama, it will affect me. Now, here of course comes the question, so why a non-Jew should not follow the laws of kosher? Because a Jew is a little bit different than a non-Jew. And it doesn't mean one is better than the other. I'm just saying different. One of the points that a Jew has is a Jew is an emissary, is a shliach. He's an emissary of the Kadosh Baruch Hu to advertise that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world, there's a God in the world. And not only that, is to serve as a proof that the Torah is real. Because if there wouldn't be a nation that follows the Torah, then who would come? Somebody can come and say, the Torah is not real. But when you see a whole nation, and you're talking about millions of people for generations, follow the Torah, this is what's called a proof that the Torah is real. There's a whole nation that follows the Torah, and they're thrown into fire, they get killed, murdered, and executed, and they still follow the Torah. We have the obligation to follow the Torah to serve as a proof that the Torah is real. Because nobody will go in such mesirut nefesh if something is not real. So, part of eating the kosher is the proof that we have to come and show that the Torah is real. And the point is that when we follow the Torah, we don't follow the Torah because we want to make a point. Because we understand that it's part of us. Now there's a story about a certain Hasid. He's a Lubavitch Hasid. He's very famous. His name is Reb Mendel Futterfass. That he was known to go into the Soviet Union and pull people out of there at the time when the borders were closed. And he really went and jeopardized his life, went behind enemy lines and saved people and did unbelievable things. Mendel Futterfass. So He there's a lot of books about him. I once read one book of just the heroic things that he did. It was unbelievable. Anyways, at some point, he got captured, and he was thrown into isolation in Siberia. I think he was there for 10 years, 15 years, whatever the punishment was. And he actually got released because that's when the borders were open in Russia and he was able to leave. If not, he would probably be there till the day he dies. But he was punished to be in isolation in Siberia. And he was there and he had to follow the Torah as hard as it was. And one time, there was barely any food there. I mean, just imagine that 10 months out of the year is all snow and ice. There's barely any food there. And finally, one time he found like a jar of food and he was excited to dig into the jar. And as he opened the jar and he looked into it, something was shining from inside of the jar that got his attention. And as he was looking into the jar, he saw that the jar was smeared with some oil. And he knew at the time that what they do is they used to rub the jars inside with the oil that comes from an impure animal to keep the freshness. And this is an individual that was starving. I mean, for days he didn't eat. And now you have a jar here of food. And, he said on himself, I mean, I had the option. I mean, this is I have to eat. This is pikuach nefesh, but I can't. I'm going to be eating something that is coming from a oil that comes from an unkosher animal. And it was a very big test for him whether to eat it or not. Because he could easily say, listen, I'm in the middle of Siberia. This is literally pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh means that I have to save my life and I'm allowed to sin. And he's like, no, I'm not going to eat it because it's something not kosher. I'm not going to let it affect me. And the result was, first of all, he lived till I think like 97 or 98. He lived till a very, very long life. And all his offsprings, go and find, you can find them here in Israel, in Kfar Chabad and in many other places. He has all his generations after him are unbelievable people, great Talmidim, great rabbis. And he was telling on himself that even though I had all the rights to eat that, I would not let it touch. I would not even touch it because I knew that this little thing, even though according to Allah, I can eat it because I have to save my life, but I didn't want it to affect me. You know, there's a story that about 200 years ago, there was, I told you about it, that there was a certain Russian ruler that he was really mean to the Jews, and he recruited the boys to the army from the age of 12. Can you imagine, from the age of 12? And the decree was that they have to be in the army for 25 years. And the 25 years started from the age of 18, which means 6 years, it has nothing to do with the decree. So they had to be in the army for 31 years. So they would take these boys, and of course, he didn't give them any freedom. They had to work on Shabbat, and they couldn't follow their religion. And one of the things is that they had to eat unkosher food. And at the time, the tzaddik of the generation was the Tzemach Tzedek, and he used to send people to these camps, and on Hanukkah to give them candles, and on Pesach to give them matzah, and he would give them all sorts of little things to do. And one time they asked him, and they told him, listen, you know, they're feeding us pork. And what should we do? Should we eat it? Or should we just go on strike and say, no, it's not kosher, and to die on Kiddush Hashem? So he said, listen, there's not really a mitzvah to die on Kiddush Hashem because of food. This is not one of the mitzvot that you put your life on the line. And you have to eat. I'm sorry to tell you, that's the decree that came from above, and you have to eat. You have to eat the unkosher food. And he tells them, eat it, but at least don't lick your fingers. Don't enjoy it. You're decreed from above to eat this unkosher food, but don't enjoy it, because they used to give them on purpose very good unkosher meat, that one can easily enjoy it. So he said, listen, eat it, but don't lick your fingers, don't enjoy it too much. So we see that halacha does permit me in some situations to eat not kosher. It even says a pregnant woman that if she asks to eat something not kosher, you have to give it to her. Because she's in a state of mind that she's allowed to eat even something that is not kosher. And if chas v'shalom a person is about to die, and the only way to save him is with something that is not kosher, you have to give that person.
But being pregnant is not a tzurat
nefesh. Excuse me?
Being pregnant is not a tzurat nefesh.
It's not, but the halacha permits of a pregnant woman that if she really is craving something that is not kosher, you're allowed to give it to her.
Wow.
So I wouldn't say it's recommended, but the halacha permits it. So same thing with the story with this Mendel Futifars. The halacha was permitting him to eat. He was mamash pikuach nefesh, but he was like, I don't want to touch it because it will affect my nefesh. So we see that many people, they go to such an extent that they would not even dare, they will starve, just not to touch something that is impure. Why? Because the kosher diet affects directly my nefesh. And when a lot of people come and tell me, I have a problem with depression, I have a problem with anxiety, I have a problem with a sleeping disorder, all sorts of different problems. The first thing that I ask is, do you eat kosher? Now, of course, most of the people will tell me, of course I eat kosher. What are you talking about? And the next question that I ask is, is your diet really kosher? Are you kosher when it's convenient? So, and I'm not chas v'shalom judging any person. I'm just saying that the kosher diet has to be beyond strict. Because something as small as even mixing the spoon that was in the milk dish and the meat dish, something as small will make a big difference. And I once had an argument. I was giving a lecture, and a woman in the middle of the lecture, she barged with her question. And she didn't wait till the end, and she couldn't stand what I had to say about kosher, and she had to throw her question. And she told me, she started arguing with me, why am I telling that about that you have to be more so strict with kosher? And she was like, listen, I eat kosher, but I don't believe that I... That first of all, she said wine doesn't have to be kosher. I don't even know where she got that from. And then she was arguing with me about the whole dishes that have to be milk and meat. And I told her, listen, first of all, I'm not making anything up. I'm not that I'm coming with my new rules. I read from the book and I tell it to you. Excuse me. But I was telling her, listen, if you now take a spoon and you put the spoon in a boiling hot cup of coffee and you mix the coffee and it's boiling hot, now the pores of the spoon open, the taste of the milk gets absorbed in the spoon, now the status of the spoon is a milk spoon. Now, a few hours later, you made yourself a chicken soup or any soup that has meat, and the meat, the soup is boiling hot. And you take that spoon that you mixed the coffee with, and you washed it, of course, but you put it in the boiling hot plate of soup that has meat. Now, the pores of the spoon open again. What happens is two actions. A, it spits out the taste of the milk. Now the entire soup is not kosher because it spit the taste of the milk into the meat soup. At the same time, it absorbed. Excuse me? No, I'm not going into all the small details in halakha. I just gave her an example. And because not always it's batel b'shishim, and sometimes it's a very small cup of soup. The point I was trying to make not to start going into every little detail. That's something screamed from the crowd. But Batel b'shishim, I said, listen, just listen to the example. Anyways, what I told her now, what happens is that the pores of the spoon are open, then the taste of the meat will get absorbed in the spoon. Now it will make the spoon unkosher. And she, of course, didn't accept the whole argument. But I told her, you don't have to accept it. I'm telling you the reality. Now what's going to happen is, you can argue as much as you want if the spoon is kosher, if it's not kosher, if the meat, if the soup is kosher or not. What it will do in a spiritual level, it will affect your nefesh. It will affect it. So later on, don't call and tell me that you have anxieties, or that you have sleeping disorder, or depressed, or any other problem, because all these problems, they come from your nefesh. And if you're not particular about something so small, then later on, don't come and complain, where is it coming from? Because if I'm depressed, it's not because I have money or I don't have money, or I can find my other half or I can't find my other half, or whatever challenge that I go by, that should not make me depressed. What will make me depressed is that my soul is depressed. And if what would put me to have an anxiety is because my soul is not eased and it's not sitting well in its place, so it's all shaking, so it will manifest into my body as an anxiety. So if a person is not willing to accept the strictness of the kosher, they cannot later on complain that I go to a class and I don't remember anything. What, something's wrong with my memory? Some people, they will watch a movie, they'll remember every line of the movie off by heart. When it comes to repeat what they learned 2 hours ago, I don't remember anything. Not too long ago, we were invited somewhere, and they were talking about a certain movie or a show or whatever. These people, they knew every line of the movie. They were saying, and the other person was completing the sentence, and I was like, wow, if you would just know this level of the memory about a few psukim in the Torah, you would be in a much better place. And you see that for junk, the mind absorbs and remembers everything. And you know, I have a relative that he knows all the football players in the world. He knows all their names, all the teams where they play on, their numbers on the shirt. And I was like, wow. And he doesn't even know one name of one rabbi in our entire history. And I said, all the football team and the players, you know their names. One rabbi you don't know, I tell him, you know who's Rabbi Akiva? No. Rabbi Meir? No. Rabbi this? No. And this is the junk that's in your mind. The number of the football player and which team he plays for. So it comes to show you that our mind, if it wants to, it remembers whatever it wants. But when it comes to Torah, suddenly you have a block. So this block comes not because your mind is not sharp. I know people that are professors and they know unbelievable depth of knowledge when it comes to the Torah, they don't know anything. Because the Torah is holy. It's not regular wisdom. The Torah is just Hashem's wisdom. So if my soul is not a vessel to accept it and to understand it, then it will never get it. And this will cause another person to have all these doubts in the Torah. It says, a lot of people says, I believe that you shouldn't steal, but I don't accept not driving on Shabbat. Where does it say in the Torah not to drive on Shabbat? So the mind will not be a vessel to accept things that are beyond this world, because the mind and the soul is fed with things that are not kosher. So why do I have to be so particular about it? Because Hashem says, because it affects you. It affects you directly, and for whatever reason, from the spiritual structure of the soul, it affects the soul of a Jew, not the soul of a non-Jew. So it doesn't mean one is better than the other. It doesn't mean I'm better than a non-Jew because I'm a Jew. It just means that the spiritual structure of my soul is different, to a point that it will affect my neshama. And the non-Jew, it will not affect their neshama. That's it. That's what it does. Now, the Torah goes and tells me about 10 animals that I'm allowed to eat. That's it. That's the whole thing. And the Torah is very particular. And then it goes and tells me everything that I'm not allowed to eat. And you have lists over animals that I'm not allowed to eat. Now, when it comes and it tells me about these 10 animals that I'm not allowed to eat, it gives signs to the Torah, to the animal. And then there are two signs that makes the animal permissible for me to eat. A, it has to chew its cut. And B, it has to have a split hoof. These are the two signs. Any animal that doesn't have these signs, I can't eat them. If you notice that all these 10 animals that we're allowed to eat, these are animals that are, in Hebrew, it's called nirdafim. They're being chased after. These are animals that are being eaten. It's not animals that eat. All these animals that we're allowed to eat, like a sheep, a goat, a cow, all that, they're vegetarians. And not only that they're vegetarians, they don't chew their food right away. They swallow it first, then they spit it out, and then they chew it. If you notice, ask a zoologist, and he will tell you. A cow will take the grass or whatever it eats, it swallows it, it doesn't chew it. Then it will spit it out, and then it will start chewing it. And then swallow, digest, and backwards and forth. If you notice, these 10 animals that we are allowed to eat, they're animals that they're being eaten in nature. That they're in Hebrew, the word is nirdaf, is being chased after. They don't chase after anyone. You're never going to see a goat that chases after anything, or a cow. They don't chase. So you can see by already the character trait of the animal, what are the animals that we're allowed to eat. Now, we have two signs that making the animals kosher. And there's a very big question. Does the sign make the animal kosher, or the animal was already kosher, does it just carries the sign? So first of all, we have to understand what are these signs. First of all, the answer for what I said is that the animal was kosher to start with. The sign just comes to show me that the animal is kosher. But it has two signs that I have to notice. At first, it has to chew its cud, and the second thing, that it has a split hoof. And all the other animals are not kosher for me. Why are they not kosher? Because if I'm going to consume them by eating them, they would lower me in my level of my spiritual level. Whether the other animals, they're not going to affect my spiritual level. And on the contrary, it will actually elevate my spiritual level. So if I eat an unkosher animal, what it does to me, it takes the level of my spirituality and it takes it a little bit lower, which actually takes me down to the level of the animal. We mentioned in one of the classes there are four levels in creations: inanimates, vegetation, animals, and humans. And the human is the one who has to elevate all four levels. So when I eat a cow that ate grass that was grown in the ground, I'm taking the inanimates that are in the ground, like the minerals and the soil, and I'm elevating it to the level of the vegetation, because of the minerals and the soil, the grass was grown. And then the cow ate the grass, and now I'm eating the cow, which means I'm able to elevate all four levels in creation. Now, if I'm eating an animal that is not kosher, then I'm going one level down in my level. I'm going down from the level of medaber, of a human, into the level of an animal. What does it mean? That my entire behavior will be animalistic. So I'm going to have the desires and the inclination of an animal. So I will want to be eating much more. Then I'll have my eating will be like an eating disorder. I'm not going to be able to control my eating. I'm going to go past the bakery and just smell this nice smell right away. Five rolls. I can't control my eating like an animal. And that will come in anything. My behavior will be impulsive. My words will be not pure. And it will trickle to many character traits that the animal has. Because the animal just wants to procreate, just wants to eat, just wants to sleep. An animal doesn't want to open a book and learn. An animal doesn't have the character trait of doing charity or kindness. Here and there you might see an animal that will help another animal. Usually animals, their character trait is an animalistic character trait. So if I consume an animal that is not kosher, then it lowers my level. So we see another reason why I have to be very particular with the actual diet that I eat. Now, when the Torah comes and tells me that only a Jew has to eat a kosher animal, we see from that it has nothing to do with health. It has nothing to do, the reason here is not health, rather only spiritual. Because the spiritual structure of my soul gets affected by the animal. A non-Jew can eat any other animal, it's not going to affect him. It's not going to affect him at all. Even though it is recommended, and I know many non-Jews that eat kosher food, they eat it just because in most cases it will be much more healthier. And in a very refined spiritual level, when you slaughter the animal the right way, it doesn't feel any pain. So the animal doesn't have any negative charge in it. Versus if you stun it. You know, in our days how they kill the animals that is not kosher, they shoot it with a stun gun. The animal goes into shock. So the meat is also very stiff. So it's not an obligation, but I know many non-Jews that they also will eat kosher. They say the food is much, much better food. So we see here that the kosher diet has nothing to do with health, it only has to do with the spiritual level. Excuse me?
Often, you know, especially in Kutzla, as I've noticed, they say, oh, the food's kosher, but it's not kosher, they don't keep Shabbat.
Then it's not kosher.
Yes, so that's another level.
In kosher, there are many, many different...
kosher, and they're not keeping Shabbat.
The food, there's many, many levels in making the food kosher. It's not only, that's why I started the class by saying that a lot of people say, oh, I eat kosher, it's cow, but I don't follow the rules that it has to be slaughtered. And I know many people that they tell me, oh, I eat kosher, I will never eat pork or shrimps or I don't know what, but I only eat a cow. So where's the certification? Oh, I don't care how it was slaughtered, I just eat the cow. So there are many levels in the making the food kosher. And of course, food that was cooked on Shabbat, yeah, of course it's going to make the food not kosher. We're not going now to all the laws, what will make the food kosher or not. We're more asking, why is it so important that I follow all these rules? Because a lot of people say, yeah, I understand, I'm not going to eat the meat and the dairy together. But I don't care if the meat was slaughtered the right way or however it was cooked. The point is that I have to maintain a certain level of spirituality. And this class is going to be very connected to the next class we're going to have about Sfirat HaOmer, because Sfirat HaOmer is all about, is climbing in my spiritual level. I refine one level in my spirituality, then I climb to the next level. So I have to maintain that spiritual level. What's the point? If I made tshuva, I sacrifice my life, I put all my energy and my thoughts and my time into coming closer to Hashem, and I'm climbing in the level of holiness. I have to maintain this level. If I don't maintain this level, I will fall down in my spiritual level. And you see in the physical world, a singer, they have to maintain their voice. They can't scream, they can't talk too loud, they have to drink all sorts of soothing drinks that the voice will stay shape. I know some chazans a week or two before the high holidays, they whisper, they don't talk. Why? I have to preserve my voice. I have to sing now. So I have a friend who was an opera singer. He made tshuva. I think he's the first chassid that is an opera singer. You can find him online. He was a world-renowned opera singer, and he became a Baal Tshuva. I can imagine what a chazan he is, but he maintains his voice. Sometimes he speaks very low. He speaks to him. I told him, "What's wrong with you?" And the first time, I didn't know. He would whisper. He's like, "No, I have to keep my voice." So a singer has to maintain the level of his voice. An athlete has to maintain shape. He can't just sit and have cheeseburgers all day long. He has to maintain his shape. So a Jew has to maintain the level of the spirituality. If you work on yourself, and you work on yourself, and you work on yourself, one little bite of something not kosher will throw you back, many levels back. And that's the problem of a lot of people. They become observant. And when I say a Baal Tshuva, it's the exact same thing for a convert. A convert struggles real hard, becomes observant, becomes Jewish, and then she has a certain level of spirituality. If they don't maintain that, they go back. So I can put a lot of energy into my spiritual growth, and then for whatever reason, I will not accept all the rules of the diet, kosher diet, and I, you know, putting a lot of effort here, and I'm losing my spiritual level over here. So I have to maintain that. Now, how do I maintain that? Is that I follow all the kosher diet. Now, in this, the kosher has a lot of other rules. Here in this parasha, we're only talking about the kosher animals right now. So kosher is how I'm mixing the meat and the dairy. Kosher in the food can be an example that I gave you, that food that that there was not given the maaser from, this is not kosher food. You can't eat that. Just the other day, we have some pots outside the house, and my wife brought in something to cook with, and I told her, wait, you can't just cook with it. You have to give maaser from that. You have to take a piece outside. Now, we don't have a coin to give it. There's a way how to do it, but here in Israel, we have to give maaser, and we have to keep what's called shvi'it and tevel. And one time, I told somebody about a certain fruit, and I told him the fruit is not kosher. And he's like, okay, that's it. You are completely crazy. You're telling me the fruit is not kosher? And I told him, yeah, this fruit is not kosher. And he told me, why are you telling me this fruit is not kosher? I told him, because this fruit comes from a tree that didn't pass 3 years from the time it was planted. This is called orla. If I now plant a tree, 3 years have to pass before I'm able to eat the fruit of this tree. Now, it doesn't have to be exactly 3 years, because if it was planted in Av, which is 2 months before Tishrei, then it's close to Tishrei. There's a lot of rules in it. We're not going to go now through all the rules, but I'm not allowed to eat fruit from a tree that 3 years didn't pass from it. The fruit is not kosher. So even fruit has to be kosher. But now we're mainly going to concentrate about the animals, because this parasha is talking about the animals, not about the fruit. It's also talking about fish. We're not going to talk about fish today. We want to talk about meat, because I mentioned 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was in a class, and I talked about the kosher meat. I think the video either went online yesterday or it's going online today. Go and look at it, about the kosher food, about the kosher meat. And it's very, very important to know, because a lot of people don't put so much emphasis about the hechsherim, about the certification. And many times I emphasize how a lot of the meat that we eat in our generation is not kosher. It will have a beautiful stamp on it, but it's not really kosher. And many rabbis in our generation, they went and they made a whole campaign against the certification by saying, listen, we are being fed trefot. Trefa is an animal that is not kosher. And why? Because they're like, it doesn't even make sense. You go to these kosher plants, how can they make the shechita so fast? And just imagine that there, let's say hypothetically, there are about 1 million Jews that eat kosher around the world, which means that we're looking at about 1 million chickens need to be koshered every week. I'm just throwing big numbers. Because we do have about a million, probably even more, but just to be a conservative with the numbers, I think there's about a million people who consume kosher food every week, that just eat kosher food. And in general, an average Jewish home will eat chicken on Friday night. Some people eat it every day. But an average family will eat chicken every week, which means that we're looking about a million chickens that need to be koshered around the world every week. You know what it is to kosher a million chickens? Go once to a plant of how they kosher the animals, and the speed that they slaughter the chickens doesn't even make sense that it can be kosher. Because the animal has to be cleaned, then the knife has to be 100%, not 99.9%, 100% perfect. There's one little blemish on the knife, the shechita is not kosher. And the shechita has to be done the right way, then the knife has to be tested. Go and they, this, a few big rabbis that made this campaign against it, they planted hidden cameras in all these plants, and you see them slaughtering like machines. And they interviewed shochtim, slaughterers, and they said, yeah, we have to do a certain amount per day. Sometimes it's 800 chickens a day. Can you imagine what it means to slaughter 800 chickens a day? It's not even normal not to make mistakes. So, and the funny thing is that a lot of people say, oh, I'm very particular with the meat, with chickens, but not with meat. And they'll go to a restaurant, they're not going to eat meat. Chicken they will eat, which is the biggest mistake, because when you slaughter a cow, you're much more careful than slaughtering a chicken. Chickens, they just go like this. With a cow, it's a much more sophisticated slaughtering to do. The point that I'm getting it, go look at that video where I'm talking about an hour and a half how the majority of the meat in our generation is not really kosher, and you should not be fooled by all the stamps that you see, because it cannot be kosher. And there's so many stories, you know, that a few, I think it was like a year ago, they caught, I think it was like 16 or 18 truckloads of meat that crossed the border from Gaza, and all the meat had stamps on them. Now the army stopped it because they thought they're smuggling terrorists or explosive or something. And the soldiers opening these trucks, and all the trucks are full of meat. And all the meat have stamps, certifications, and these trucks are coming from Gaza. So there's so much problems with kosher meat in our generation, and there's so many laws. You know, there's another organization, it's called PETA. I'm not so crazy about this organization because they have an agenda, but that's not the point. And they come and they put hidden cameras in all sorts of places to prove how the animals are being mistreated. According to Halakha, if the animal was tortured before it was slaughtered, the animal is not kosher. So you can have the most mehudal slaughtering out there. If the animal was tortured before that, it's not kosher. And if you see how most of the animals are being how they kept, that's torture. When the animal is sitting like this and it can't move, that's a form of torture. Now, there's much more to it. I don't want to go totally sidetracked. Go and look at that video because it's extremely important. But this is one problem that a lot of people, they oversee. According to Halakha, that if a chicken was it got hit from a certain impact, it will make the chicken not kosher. Now, for Halakha, if the chicken was thrown from a height of a meter and it didn't land with its wings, then it means that it has some type, it got hit in such an impact, but will make the chicken unkosher. And sometimes you see trucks with the crates of the chickens, they come, and the guys are standing on the truck and they throw the crates down. Now, this is a height much more than a meter, which means that if the chicken didn't flap its wings to land on its feet, then, and it was in a cage, that means the chicken is not kosher before it was even slaughtered. So even if the shechita, if the slaughtering is done right, before that already the chicken is not kosher. So go watch that video about the meat, because it's extremely important, because we are fed a lot of meat that is not kosher. The point that I'm trying to say is that the meat affects me directly. It affects me spiritually, and it not only that it affects me spiritually, the signs that the meat will have that will make it for the animal to make it kosher comes to teach me something very, very, very amazing. A, I want to know that the meat affects me directly. And if I eat something that is not kosher, it will affect me to a point that it will come out in some type of a way. And usually it will come in a spiritual or an emotional way. Emotional way, it will affect, I will have, like I said before, it can be depression and anxiety and fears and nightmares and sleeping disorder and all sorts of emotional problems. It can also come spiritually that I'm not going to have any excitement to do any mitzvahs. I'm going to do it in a very mundane and dead way. Or you see sometimes a lot of people, they'll keep some mitzvot. You come and tell them to do another thing. No, 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 I don't want to do that. I don't want to do this. Spiritually, it puts a block. This is one thing. But if I want to take it to a next level, if you're looking at the two signs that the animals have, they come and teach me something very special. That the first thing is that the animal has to have a split hoof. If you look at the split hoof, then it's like two fingers pointing to two directions. These two fingers that pointing to two different directions, they're coming to signify the two paths that I serve God in. One of them is the side, the right side, which is called Kav HaChesed, the side of kindness, and the other side is the Kav of Gvura, of severity. In most cases, we come from one side. Our neshama will either come from the side of Gvura or the side of Chesed. You can come from both. That's one of the many explanations why we have groups in Judaism. A lot of people say, why do we have to have the Sephardi and the Ashkenazi? It's causing a lot of problems. So one of the many reasons is because where the soul originates from, one comes from the side of Chesed, one comes from the side of Gvura. That in this world it will manifest into a different place. Now, if my soul comes from Tzad HaChesed, then it means that it will be much easier for me to be kind and to be charitable and to help and to be courteous. But when it comes to be very strict in something to do with the Torah, I'm not going to be so strict. Because my neshama comes from the side of Chesed. So I might be an amazing person, very charitable, very giving, very welcoming and accepting and all these good things. But when it's going to come the time that I have to be very strict in halacha, in regards to how strict I am with kosher, I don't come from the side of Gvura. I'm going to be like, it's not so important. I don't need to light the candles before the time. 2 minutes before, 2 minutes later, it's not so important. Why? Because I'm lacking the side of severity, so I don't know when to say, no, this is important. And another person will come from the side of Gvura, and he will be particular 6 hours between the meat and the dairy. It's 6 hours and not 5 hours and then 59 minutes. But when it comes to giving charity, no. Comes to help another person, Doesn't mean the person is bad. It's just we operate in two motions, Chesed and Gvura. The split hoof, excuse me, you want to aim for Tiferet, and this is exactly the sign of the split hoof. That the split hoof, people imagine the shoe horse. How do you say shoehorn, shoe horse? How do you call it?
Horseshoe.
Because in Hebrew it says mafreset parsa. Parsa is a horseshoe. So when I became religious and I kept saying mafreset parsa, I was imagining in my mind this horse. Sure. Some people have this superstition that if you hang it on the door, I don't know what it does. Maybe it keeps the witches away. I don't know where this nonsense comes from. But you see in many homes, they put a split shoe horse on the wall. Nonsense, by the way. But the mafreset parsa, look at the actual animal. It has two fingers and the fingers go like that. Yeah. Why? Because it comes to signify that even though I have one side more empowered, I should also serve Hashem from the other side too. If I'm coming from the side of Gvura, I should also serve Hashem with the side of Chesed. And that's striving to come to Tiferet, to the middle. That I can take something that I'm lacking and empower it. And believe it or not, that will affect it. The kosher diet will affect it. That if I'm very pulling towards gvura, and my chesed is lacking, which means that I can't even come closer to tiferet, by following the laws of kosher animal, it will allow me to be able to have this split hoof that I can migrate some of my energy from where I'm more powerful into the side that is a little bit lacking. So that's the first thing. The second thing, the sign is that the animal has to chew its cud. And this comes to teach me that in my day-to-day life, I constantly have to think of things. Somebody comes and tells me something, I can right away throw a reaction. And in most cases, it's not going to be the right reaction because it hurt my feelings or my ego or whatever it is. Very easy to right away throw back a comment. But the right way, what the Torah wants to teach me is chew on it first before you throw it out. Chew on it a few more times before you say your comment. Because maybe that person didn't really mean it. Or maybe he's going through a bad time. Or whatever it is. And even if he meant it deliberately, it doesn't mean you have to go to his level and give him the exact same dose back. And this is one example out of many. But constantly in our life, we're dealing with situations that I react very impulsively. And that's a character trait of an animal. Animal doesn't think, okay, let me think if I should... An animal right away will strike. Now, if it's a vicious animal, the reaction will be instantly. A dog, for example, you'll kick the dog, assuming that it's not talking about a poodle right now that is afraid of his own shadow. I'm talking about a normal sized dog. He will right away attack you, if not with a bite, with a bark. Or, any type of these animals, whether it's a snake or a wild animal, you'll do a quick move, it will attack right away. But a goat, if you're going to scream at a goat, it's not going to scream back at you. It will usually will move back. Look at the character traits of these kosher animals, these 10 animals. They're not aggressive animals. You're going to hit it, it's not going to hit back. Look, for example, at all the animals that have the split hoof, they don't know how to kick. A horse, a donkey, a camel, if chas v'shalom they kick you, that's a very powerful kick. Cows don't kick, and sheep and lambs, they don't kick, and goats, they don't know how to kick. And even if they throw their leg, it has no power in it. A horse will kick a person, he can kill him. So you see the character trait of the animal. So the animal that chew its cud, I have to learn from that I'm going to be faced all day long with situations that I have to, so to say, digest the situation before I react. It's very easy to right away impulsively curse or hit or abuse or do anything because it's come impulsively. But that's coming from a very bad place. If I know how to, so to say, chew my cud, then let me digest this situation right now. And probably if I calm down, tomorrow my reaction is going to be completely, completely different because I'm already relaxed. So what I want to take from these two signs that A, I have to serve Hashem in both ways. Both from the side of Chesed and the side of Gvura. I want to reach to the middle, to the Tiferet. And more than that, I should chew my cud in everything. Not to be quick to react. Not to be quick to judge a person. It's not only sometimes you're reacting, it's also judging. A person will do something and I will observe what he's doing and right away judge that person the wrong way. The Torah comes and teaches me, don't be so quick to judge or to react. Swallow it, throw it up, swallow it again, bite it as much as you can. When it's ready to be swallowed, then you can swallow it and finish with it. So I want to take from this a few important things. A, that my kosher diet is beyond important. It's crucial to my spiritual level. If I will put a lot of energy into my Avodat Hashem, and at the same time, simultaneously, I'm not keeping the kosher diet, I'm injecting a lot of spiritual into my neshama, and I'm losing it from this side constantly. So the kosher diet is the foundation of my life. I have to have this in my life. So the first and most important is to take from that is that I have to become much, much more stricter with kosher. And it goes to the little things, is checking your vegetables for little bugs, making sure that everything is separated. You want to go through the entire laws to make sure that your kosher diet is 100%. And if something on the way arouses, like I told you before, all these emotional problems and even physical and health problems, go to search where maybe there's a problem with that. If you go out of this class and after 2 hours you don't remember anything, then you have to say maybe somewhere we're meeting, something is not kosher, because my mind is able to absorb the last movie that I saw, or like you said, people remember the jokes, but I am not able to absorb the Torah. Something's wrong here. It means that my nefesh is not a vessel to absorb the Torah, which means that there's something impure in my nefesh. And sometimes it can be something very small. It can be something, and we talked about it many times, I don't want to repeat it, but the point that you want to take from that is that your kosher diet has to be 100%, not 90%. More than that, since the parasha is talking about these two signs on the animals, excuse me? You want to strive to be 100%. I don't know about who's 100% or not. I'm not going into people's kitchens. I'm sure that if I look into myself, I'm also as strict as I want to be. It's also here and there you make a mistake. Sometimes, unfortunately, you count on the supervision on somebody else, and that person can make a mistake. So we're not coming to blame anybody. I'm talking that I want to strive to become 100% kosher.
And
I'll tell you in a second what you can do, or you can go watch that video. But I'll tell you in a second. Well, the thing is that the main solution to do with meat is that you buy the animal yourself and you hire a shochet, and the shochet does it for you.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And if you live in Tzfat, there's a very good shochet that you can buy from them. And we're not going to name names, so people are not going to start telling me that I'm promoting businesses here. But there's a shochet in Tzfat, who is a very Yerei Shamayim, and he buys the meat in organic farms that are grass-fed, and the meat is healthy, strong meat. It costs a little bit more, but the shechita is done right, the kashering is done right, the cows are grass-fed, they don't eat GMO and all the junk that everybody else is feeding them, and they're not injected with antibiotics and hormones and all this, and you can go and look and say, I want this cow. Most people don't do that. They just tell them, give me what I want. Some people say, I want to buy this cow. There are farms here in the north that you can buy your animals, and you hire a shochet and you do it. It's not such a big deal. And if you really care about your health and your spiritual level, then you invest a little bit more money. So instead of eating everyday meat, so you eat once a week meat on Shabbat, or twice a week. Anyways, it's not good to consume so much meat. And you do it the right way. There's ways to do everything. Chicken? Same thing. He does all the animal. You tell him what animal you want, and he goes and buys it for you. And here in the Galil, and you know what? It's not an excuse just here in the north. We have a group of ladies, and once a month we have a class in Ra'anana. And many women come from all around the area of Ra'anana, and once a month we have a class there. Half of these women, they grouped together, and they're ordering the meat from here. And he delivers it to them. Then they make an order, and when it's a big amount, it's cheaper and it delivers. But anyways, before we go into questions, let me just summarize the class. That A, I want to make sure that my kosher diet is 100%. Because whether I agree with it or not, it does affect me spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and physically. And I do attribute a lot of our problems to our diet. Like I told you before, when people come with all sorts of emotional problems, depression, sadness, anxieties, I do attribute that a lot to our diet. And when you really go the extra mile with kosher, you will see a big difference in your behavior, in your Yirat Shamayim, in your God-fearing level. I know many people that come and tell me, listen, my kids, they don't want to put tefillin, they don't want to learn Torah. And my first question is, make sure that they're eating kosher, that their kosher diet is 100%. And the reason that the Torah, I asked the question in the beginning, why is Hashem cares about it? Because He knows that the little details will affect us. One little detail in the entire process of the kosher that is done wrong will affect my nefesh to a point that one person will affect in being depressed, another person will affect in being sick, another person will be affected that they don't have Yirat Shamayim, they don't want to do certain mitzvot. The bottom line is that the kosher diet affects us a lot. And for the ones who are skeptical, put it to the test. Go on a diet for 2 months. Be extremely cautious and strict with kosher, and I can guarantee to you, you'll see a massive change in all the problems, where all the departments that you're finding a deficiency or a lack of something. More than that, I want to take something practical, is that when the Torah comes and gives me 2 signs, I'm just going to repeat it, that I want to make sure that I serve Hashem in both motions of both Gvura and Chesed. And more than that, that I have to chew my cud, that I have to not be so quick to judge situations and not to throw things out of my mouth and not to behave a certain way and right away shut the phone or turn my shoulder away because somebody said something I don't like, is to chew and to digest everything. Not everything is directed at me. Sometimes my reaction can be crucial. Sometimes just closing your mouth in a certain encounter will change the entire situation. And sometimes just by me opening my mouth and saying one word, I can chas v'shalom destroy marriages like that and destroy things. So the Torah comes and tells me, like a kosher animal, chew it. Chew something. But don't throw, don't be impulsive. Don't have the character trait of an animal that just reacts right away. Take your time and think about it. Bezrat Hashem, we should apply this all to our life. And I can guarantee to you, and I'm telling you that from my own experience, that when you apply that kosher is the foundation of our life. When I started becoming observant, the first thing that I did was kosher. That's the first thing. I mean, I started putting tefillin on, and my emphasis was on kosher. Because I was like, okay, that is my being. What I put in my body, that is what's going to come out. I put junk into my body, then junk will come out. Consume a lot of sugar, then your body will start spitting out pimples and rashes and all sorts of things like that. Put healthy food into your body, you'll see your body is reacting the right way. So Bezrat Hashem, we should all elevate ourselves to a much higher spiritual level. And I didn't mention that because we talked about it many other times. Part of the concept of consuming the meat, I'm just saying that because we said before that till Noah we weren't supposed to eat, we're not allowed to eat meat. One of the motions of eating meat is that I am elevating the level of the animal to the level of human, and that's part of the structure of creation, that I have to do that. The animal wants to be eaten more than what I want to eat the animal. We spoke about it in one of the previous classes, how the animal wants to be eaten by me. It wants to get this elevation. So Bezrat Hashem, our life should be much more kosher and much more pure. And needless to say that it will make our life much more elevated and closer to Hashem. And Bezrat Hashem, we should constantly learn to grow and grow much more higher in our spiritual level. And the foundation to that is our kosher diet.